Welcome to Honey, I'm Homeschooling the Kids, a podcast that steps into alternative education, parenting, and living a funner, fuller family life. I'm Robin, home educator, unschooling mom to two funny, eclectic kids, and we're here to create a space for families to listen, connect, learn from others, and be inspired. Join us every 2 weeks to hear interviews and tips from experts in learning, education, and parenting, and stories from families that are playing full out in the arena of life and education. World schooling, unschooling, alternative schooling, homeschooling, or just creating a whole new style of learning.
Who did you interview today, Mom?
I interviewed Sandra Cushway from Freedom Thinkers Education School. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't. What's it about?
It's actually a small school in Fort St. John, not that far from us. And it's an independent school that's opened recently. And I didn't know about it, but I had more than one person independently come and ask me if I knew about the school that's making some great changes in Fort St. John. And so I looked it up. I looked up Freedom Thinkers, and then I found out Sandra Cushway is a founder. So I had to call her and ask her to come on the show and share her beautiful story about the school and the amazing teaching and environment that she creates for multi-age classrooms and the family feeling that she loves in her school.
Cool. Enjoy listening to the episode.
Today I have Sandra Cushway as my guest. Sandra's joining me from Fort St. John, British Columbia, Canada. Thank you for joining me today, Sandra.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you on. Sandra is the founder and principal educator of Freedom Thinkers Education School, and she's passionate about education for all, and she's constantly striving to improve learning opportunities, not only for herself, but for others as well. Thank you very much for joining me today, Sandra.
For having me.
I appreciate that we're able to connect here.
Yes.
So, just for the listeners here, I don't know Sandra. I have not met her face to face yet, but I have heard of Sandra. And the reason why I got into contact with Sandra, because I live in Northern Alberta, not that far from Fort St. John, about 2 hours from Fort St. John, where Freedom Thinkers is. And I heard from more than one person, either friends of mine or people who I would just meet, and they would ask me, they would know me or what I do with my podcast. And they would say, have you heard about this school in Fort St. John? And I would say, no. But at first I said, no, I haven't heard about it. And then, of course, I would say, yes, I've heard about it. People keep asking me if I know the founder, if I know about this school. So, of course, I had to look up the school. And I found your contact information and I contacted you. So thank you for coming on the show. I'm really excited to have you on and to hear your story about your passion for education and why you've started this very unique school in what to most people is a fairly remote, far northern community as well, and how it's thriving so well. So welcome, Sandra. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to hear that, actually. As difficult as it is for me to come on and speak about it, because I'm not a public speaker, I do passionately believe in what we're doing. And I would like to see the whole system change towards this. And so I know this is one of the things that I need to do in order to do it, is to get it there, is to promote what we're doing and try to share what we're doing in hopes that changes can be made.
Nice. So why do you think that things need to change? What do you see that needs to change?
Oh dear. Well, I got into my school because I became very frustrated in the public system. And it was about 10 years ago. I guess there were two main driving forces that was the base of my frustration. One is that I felt that there was a better way to teach and reach children. And I didn't feel within the confines of the system that we could get there, although we try very hard and there are many teachers that try to do that. The system itself kind of prevents that from happening on many levels. And then the other thing was the politics that are driving the public system. And I realized there are politics in everything, but it got to the point where I remember looking at my clock and thinking, I have 1 hour left. And I just remember coming home that day thinking, that's the teacher I never wanted to be. Hmm. And so at that point, I had just about decided to quit teaching. And as we were traveling home to my home, my husband and I and daughter were traveling up there one weekend, and I was very frustrated. And it was in the middle of a teacher strike. And I just said, you know, this is not what I went into education for. And so by the time we left, I said, that's it. I'm quitting. This is my final year. But of course, as we carried on, I only made about 10 miles. And I thought, but that's ridiculous. I love teaching. And so by the time we had actually made the whole 100-mile trip, I had done the entire gamut from completely quitting to this is ridiculous and somebody needs to take the bull by the horns per se and make some changes. And there's no reason that that can't be me.
Definitely. And so you decided to make the change right then and there?
I did.
Good. That's how things happen.
That was very easy and then things fell nicely into place.
Well, things don't always work that way in life, right? If everything was easy, then yeah, I mean, the world would be a very different place. So
yes.
So this was during the teacher strike. And I remember this was quite a long teacher strike in BC, right? If I remember correctly, the kids, it happened, the kids were not going back to school for quite a while. I want to say a couple months.
This was actually the one after that. The original one that you're talking about was, I believe, close to 2 months. And I was in my teaching practicums at that time. So I wasn't actually in that strike. But this one was, I think it was close to 2 weeks or something. But just really, there were still some negative feelings from the first strike. There were a lot of political things being played, and I don't like to play on that field. And so I found it frustrating. It's just really not, that was not what I went into teaching for.
So then what was your first move? What did you do?
Well, I actually came back and I approached our school district. And so I said, you know, I believe things can be different. I would like to do that. And I've done a lot of work with our district throughout the years, or I had. So they knew who I was. They knew what I was capable of. And I said, you know, I really would like to make some changes in our system. I kind of laid out what I saw happening. And that was, I believe, the beginning of May. And they said, oh, we can't possibly, or they said, when were you thinking to do this? And I said, well, September. And they said, well, we can't possibly do that. And I said, why not? And they said, well, we can't get things in place that quickly. I said, I can put things in place. And yes, I certainly can get them in that quickly. As a matter of fact, I intend to. And they said, no, we can't. There's no way that we can do that in that time frame. So I said, okay, well, I'm doing it anyway then. And so that year I actually taught full time and I did a pilot project with students. And what I wanted was somewhere between 5 and 10 students to actually come in and try the system out. And so I taught my regular full-time job. And then what I did is these students, there were 7 of them that started with me, 1 that joined later on, so I ended up with 8, but 7 that basically what they were they were homeschooler students, and then they would come to me after school and I would work with them. So in fact, they weren't really being homeschooled. I was educating them, but it was after school time. So I would teach my job, come home, start at 3:30, and then we would go till, I think, I can't even remember, 6:30 or 7 then that night.
Wow, okay.
And so that was very successful. And it was exactly, well, not exactly, but it really was what I thought it would be, what in my mind it should be. And so then the next year, then I went back to our district and said, look, this is a better way. I'm doing it. Either get on the bus or you're going to get left behind. And so then we did. The district and I worked together that year. I worked under our distant ed school here in town, and it was great. It went along. I had 24 students that year. And so what I did is I worked my regular job at Belldonald until lunch, and then I would come home and we would start at lunchtime. Then we were, or 1 o'clock, we would start with the next group. Then we did that for the year, and it worked really well. And everyone agreed that it worked really well, and things were going really smoothly and very excited. Parents were excited. Students were excited. And then, unfortunately, there were some difference of agreement as far as who was going to choose students for my school, how teachers would be decided, how the money would come in. And so there were some economic political things that came into play. And it was basically decided that they couldn't support me the next year. And so that really frustrated me.
As definitely happens. Now, before you go on to that part, can you tell me a little bit of how was your program different? So, for example, you worked during the daytime, the first part, and then in the evening, you worked with homeschooling students. And then after that, you worked until lunch. And then at 1 o'clock, you would run your separate program. How was that different from the regular classroom? What did you do differently?
Well, our program, for one thing, we run from, and I'll just take it from right now because we started small and then worked up. Our program runs from grade 4 to grade 9. But we don't have separate rooms. So they're all intermingled in amongst all of the rooms. And with our program, there are a number of things. One is that we teach a lot of real life skills. And although we used to say that we taught life skills in the public system, I found it difficult to do that. It was kind of one of those things we said, but, you know, well, let me put it this way. You know, we say we teach responsibility, but as soon as the first child gets hurt on the snow pile, we don't let anyone play on the snow pile. Right. And so that's not really my belief of teaching responsibility. You know, in order to teach responsibility, you have to let them keep playing on the snow pile and teach them how to learn to play on the snow pile. And so that's one of the things, is that we teach a lot of life skills, and we teach money management. We teach time management. It's a project-based learning school in the fact that the students choose what they're interested in learning, and then we make sure that the learning outcomes for those grades are met, but a lot of times through what they want to learn. So, you know, teaching writing skills are the same whether you're writing about a chair or whether you're writing about, you know, stars and planets. The actual setup, you know, proper opening sentence, all your information backed up with facts with a good, strong closing sentence is the same. And so we try to work the learning outcomes and what we teach through the interests of the child.
More natural learning. Very much experiential natural learning, what we call in the homeschooling community.
Right. And right down to the fact that, you know, they all have jobs in our school. And so in order to get those jobs, they have to do resumes and cover letters. And then they compete for these jobs. Of course, some make more money than others. And so by the time they're through our school, we have resumes and cover letters that are so well done, you wouldn't pick them out from adults.
Nice. So is this school, are you an independent school now, or are you run through the local public school? Is it still kind of the same program when you first started, or are you completely independent?
No, we are completely.
You are. Okay. So that last year when you were with the school, when you would teach until noon and then come home and then run the program at 1:00, that was the last year when they said, well, the funding's going to be different, the teacher's going to be different, who your students are going to be different. That was when you ended it and then went independent?
Yes.
Okay. And how long ago was that? How long has Freedom Thinkers been an independent?
This is our second year fully independent.
So do you still have students from grade 4 to 9, or has the age group changed?
No, it's 4 to 9. And the reason we have students that would really like us to go right up through grade 12, but it's too difficult when you get into that grade 10, 11, and 12 and the graduation requirements.
Right.
We don't, you know, we're not set up with the proper labs. I don't feel that we could do a really good, solid job of what we need to for those grades.
So you're going up to grade 9, and it's mixed classrooms, mixed ages.
Yes, it is.
Awesome. And are they, so when they're working, it's very student directed. Are they creating the framework for the projects that they're creating and working on, or are you creating the framework for what they're doing?
They are. But what happens is every time, so last year we had 48 students, this year we have 61 students. And so when they decide to do a project, they do a project, and then every person presents their project. And so when they present, everyone else listens and they provide feedback. So these are the things that we like. These are the areas that we feel that you could improve on. But while we're giving feedback to that person, we're all learning from it. And so if one of the pieces of feedback comes in and it says, you know, we noticed that you had some spelling mistakes in your slides and that doesn't look very good for presenting, then from there on out, we expect we would have no spelling mistakes on other slides, that you have learned from that presentation and you will take that information and apply it to your own and make sure that yours is fixed.
Right. Okay. So then for the school right now, do you find that there is a type of family or student that that you attract, or is it kind of a whole gamut?
Well, I specifically take students based on different attributes. So for instance, last year I had to turn 43 students away. We didn't have enough space for. This year I have 60 some letters in already of people trying to get in here, and we'll only be able to take 20 some students. So I know that there are at least 40 some and however many more letters come in from now till June. of students that will be turned away. And so with that, then what happens is people write a letter saying, we would like to come to your school. And then I do an interview. And from that interview, then I choose the students that will attend. And I really am very careful about choosing from all areas of the area or life, as you might put it. I try to choose students that are academically strong. I choose students that are academically, they struggle. We have three students that would have, that were on some kind of severe behavior plan. We have children that have dyslexia. We have kind of all across the board. And the reason that I do that is because I've heard so many times with independent schools, oh, you know, they take the top 5% of the students. So who couldn't be successful with them?
Right.
And I also don't want the other, to, you know, to, I don't want the word to get out there that, oh, well, you know, they only take the students that struggle and my child is a strong learner. And so that's not going to meet their needs. And so really what I'm trying to put out there is that, you know, if you have a good program, this program will work for anyone. It doesn't matter whether you're academically strong or, you know, you struggle in that area or whether you have some kind of difficulties learning, that this program is a strong program and it will work for across the board.
Okay. So what does success look like for you in your school? How do you, is there a measurement? Do you still go by, I guess you would be BC. So can you explain to me what your definition of success is for Freedom Thinkers?
Well, success to us is a continual movement toward improving. Now, we don't use grades here. There are only two times we give grades. We give them at the end of the year because we are required to do so. And we give them once in the middle of the year. And that's simply so that we don't get to the end of the year and people are surprised by what they get. So success is always improving and they're critiquing, they're constantly monitoring. They themselves, when they do that, the grading in the middle of the year and at the end of the year, they actually grade themselves and they give themselves their mark and they basically write their report card. Now, of course, we know that if we don't agree with that, then there is a problem, but it rarely ever, ever do you look and say, this is really, I don't agree with this grade. I think I've done it about twice. And of those, of the two times, they've been really hard on themselves. And it's like, no, this is not accurate. Actually, you're higher than that. And so success is where the students themselves know that they are learning and improving and getting better at what they're doing.
Yes, I love that. I definitely love that. So when you say that you have to give them a grade, is that because you are an independent school with BC, because you're following BC curriculum? Why yes. Do you have to give them a grade?
That's why, because they, at this point, now we are working at getting rid of the grades altogether. Mm-hmm. But at this point, the BC, the ministry said you need to give a grade at the end of the year. And I think that's for, if, particularly if they're transferring into other schools and stuff, then it allows other schools to kind of have a feel for where the student is.
Right. Okay. And so what's been your feedback so far for families, and especially from your students as well? What's been your feedback from both families and students in your school?
Well, I tell you, that's one of the greatest things that I love about teaching here is that there is a whole different feeling here. And I hear that from students. I hear it from parents. I hear it every day when the students go to leave. What we hear is, thanks for teaching us, Mrs. Cushway, and the other staff members, of course, there as well. So, you know, thanks for teaching us, Mrs. Penner. Thanks for... And they will go out. They always wish, you know, goodbye. It's just a different feel. They love being here. They know that they are very fortunate to be here because many didn't make it into our school. And so they feel that it's a privilege, not a right, to be here. And some of these students have been here for a number of years and they all feel like a very close family. So it has a different feeling to it.
Hmm. And where is your school located? Are you located on a property outside of Fort St. John, or like what does it look like at your school when they come there?
Well, yes, we have no busing, of course, because it is an independent. So people come from all over. We have three different groups of people that drive just about an hour one way to get students here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know where Beldonnell School is. Ironically, I taught at Beldonnell School for 18 years. We live literally... you can walk it in 10 minutes to walk from Beldonnell to our property, and you can drive it in less than a minute. So we're just past the Beldonnell School community of Belleville.
Right. Sorry, I'm giggling because that's a bit ironic in some ways, but yep.
It is. We have great relationships. We just put on a big drama production here and Belldonald came down to watch.
Nice.
And so, yes, we work very, very well together, Belldonald and I. So,
and from families, do they understand? I mean, from the traditional sense, I completely get what you're doing. We've homeschooled our family for, oh my goodness, almost 6 years now. And my broader community internationally of homeschooling community, unschoolers, you know, the philosophy is very much passion driven, child led, you know, doing what you love to do and becoming an independent learner who, you know, really your motivation is your own true real motivation. It's not getting validation from an outside source, becoming the independent lifelong learner. And the power of that really for your adulthood, it's creating your own person that way from a child, from this time. So have parents understood? Because, you know, sometimes when you go from a traditional way to a quote unquote non-traditional way, it can be a bit of an adjustment. How have parents adjusted to it? Because sometimes I think kids have an easier way, but how have the parents adjusted to it?
Well, there are a couple things. One, we have great, great parents who I believe understand the whole thing. I do open houses all the time. So when parents come, we talk about our programs and how it's different and why we do it. But there are a couple of things that we hear over and over again. One is that our child is becoming much more responsible, we are noticing, in all areas of life, at home, at school. They're just changing. And so that's huge. And the other thing is that they like to be here and they want to be here. Well, actually, there's another two, is because they're constantly looking for business opportunities because they start businesses here all the time. And so they see that. Now, there's also a part of educating parents. So I'll just give you a little example. One parent walked in and they happened to have more than one child in the school. And they looked and said, oh, their child wasn't working. And I said, oh, well, she's reading. Right. And so they went around the school a bit longer. And it was about 10 minutes later, they came back and said, my child's still not working. And I, at that point, I sensed that there was some concern about this. And I said, well, they're reading. I know, but everybody else seems to be working. And of course, in our school, it looks very different because we have some that are doing lessons. We have some that are doing silent reading. We have some that are doing a project they're doing. Someone else might be doing. So people are doing all kinds of things. And so I sensed this was a problem. And I said, well, we do see reading as learning. I can see this look on their face. Well, yeah, but everybody else is working. And so I said, you know, I think I'm wondering, I said, if you would have walked in and we would have all been reading quietly, if that would have looked different. I said, did you do reading in school when you went to school? Oh, yeah, we had silent reading every day. And how long was it? Oh, well, anywhere from 15 minutes to half an hour every day. And I said, but that's what your child is doing right now. They're doing their silent reading. And they kind of get this funny look and they left. And then the next day they came back in and said, you know what? You're right. I went home and thought about that and thought, if I would have walked in there and everyone would have been reading, I would have looked and thought, oh, it's silent reading time. And I would not have thought a single thing about it. Mm-hmm. But because that doesn't look like that. And then I went on to explain that, you know, we had a child that had a very difficult time in the school system, was on a behavior modification plan, just because he couldn't sit still very long. And so we were doing a writing assignment. And I monitored him throughout the day. And at 7 different times, he came back to his writing assignment during the day. But he would only write for anywhere from 12 to 15 minutes, usually closer to 15. Once he did 16, but basically from 12 to 15 minutes. But at the end of the day, that's an hour and 3/4 of writing that right. he's done. And that child was in grade 4. And I, you know, when you look at that and you think it just looks different, it doesn't mean that we sit down and we write for an hour and 3/4. It doesn't even mean we sit down and write for half an hour because that's where he was getting into trouble. He couldn't sit still for that long. Mm-hmm. But he could sit still for 12 to 15 minutes and he just kept coming back. So at the end of the day, there was actually a lot more writing done, but it just didn't look like the traditional way, and the traditional way didn't work for him.
Right. It wasn't, this is your block of time. You have to complete it and down to this part right. at this by this time. And then we're going to move on to something else. Put it away for, in, you know, Wednesday or tomorrow or whatnot.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. So then can you give me an example of, you know, taking from that, what a typical day, or not even typical, what would a day, any day, choose look like at your school if we came for an open house or if we just came for a visit?
Well, I can't answer that question because there are never 2 days the same. So let me kind of give you an overview. So every morning our staff meet, and there are six of us here that are full time and two that come in part time. And so I might say, okay, you know, if the one lady that comes in part time, she does novels with students. If she comes in and says, okay, I would like to take the Wrinkle in Time students. Okay. She pulls her Wrinkle in Time students. The language arts teacher might take a grade of, a group of grade fives. Now, when I say grade fives, we have to be careful with that because they don't have to necessarily, they have to do their grade or where they're capable of working, but they can also join other groups. Mm-hmm. So one girl decided that she was going to join the grade, she was in grade seven, and she said, I know that I've missed some things in math. And so one year it was actually the year before last, she did every grade five, six, and seven math lesson that year. She did three math lessons a day. And she had to come to her own math lesson, but she chose to do the other two to fill in some gaps. So anyway, so people will take their groups. And then when I'm done teaching my lesson and we're not set on time frames, if I've done my lesson in 10 minutes, I'm done. If, on the other hand, I'm on a roll and things are going great and I thought it was going to be 20 minutes, but we are on a roll, we might be 45. Mm. So when I'm done with my group, they just go and they float back into the regular thing. Because they always know what they're doing. They always have projects they're working on. They do Duolingo. They have Mathletics. They have things that they do online. And they always have projects they're working on. And so they know how to monitor their time. And so they float out into the main thing. I look around and think, oh, no one has the grade nine group right now. And so I pull the grade nine group. And then when the language arts teacher looks, she says, oh, I have the nines and the sevens are out. So she's going to take five. And so it's really just kind of an ebb and a flow all day long.
Right. I love it. And it's really working with the individual learner, which is what I hear as well. It's not just like, well, you're a certain age and you're in this grade, so we're only going to do this. You know, it's allowing them the responsibility and freedom to work.
Totally. Yeah. And they always pair up. I just smiled today. One of the grade sevens came and said, oh, Callie and I are ready to present our next project. And she's in grade seven and Callie's in grade four. And you think, now, how did that happen? But you know, it's like that all the time. A little girl came in, she was in grade four. We have a big grade nine boy. She said, Finn, can you help me build this graph? And the next thing I know, they're laying side by side on the carpet and he's showing her how to build the graph. And that's just how it works in our school.
I love it. Yeah. Because, you know, I was going to ask, you know, some of the myths that you, or the concerns that you get sometimes, that kids have to be the same age and the same grade and then move through accordingly together. There has to be a group and a lump, you know, and then they move through and that's the best way of learning. Or, you know, older kids shouldn't be with younger kids in learning. They should actually be separated or segregated. You know, it's proof that the opposite actually works very well.
And they look out and care for each other too. And it is, you know, that's the biggest thing is about the relationships. And when you come in here and we're very, very fussy about no bullying and everyone is treated kindly and respectfully. That's when I do my interviews, I cannot tell you how devastating some of those interviews are. My husband won't even sit in on the interviews anymore because students will sit across from me and literally cry. They feel they're stupid. They don't fit in. It's horrific, actually. It's the hardest job I have all year is sitting through the interviews and trying to decide on the students for the following year.
I believe it. Definitely. I get you on that one. It's heartbreaking because I see as well that you would want to take all of them in as well, you know, and create, you know, create a better, loving, more connected space for all of them at the same time. And that is also what I hear is that recognizing the individual and creating that connection because for learning, no matter what, you need that foundation. You need that connection in order to learn and to do so many things that are vital to life as well.
Well, and we realized that when you're supported, we had a young lady that came to us and spent a number of years here. She just went on last year. She's in grade 10 this year, but she had dyslexia and so was not successful in the school system and came and really didn't want to talk about it, didn't want people to know. And then as time went on, she chose to do that as her project. And so she learned about it and realized that, you know what, she wasn't stupid like she was feeling. She just learned differently. And so it took us a long time to present. We presented together to begin with because each time she'd start to present, she would start to cry. because it was so personal to her. And so her and I team presented for a while, and I took her story and she took the factual part of it. And then gradually, as she got stronger, it turned over to her until such times as she could do the whole thing. And now she has gone on this year to make herself a blog about what it's like to have dyslexia in the school system. And she is trying to help other students that have it to say, you know, there are a lot of students out there, and this is what we can do. And this is how I overcame it. And this is what I learned and was successful doing. And that, of course, was through the whole thing where she studied it, learned about it, and worked with that she was able to get to that point.
Right, and she created it and made it her own. And applicable to her life and situation. Is her blog online? Would we be able to find her blog online?
Yes, you can. Grace, I think if you, Gracie Chapel is her name. And so if you just if you just type that in, I think it will come up.
Perfect.
Living with Dyslexia is her thing. And she comes back all the time to open houses. She phoned me and said, and then days that she's not in school, she'll phone and say, hey, Mrs. Cushby, can I come for the day? Which, of course, she can always.
It's always open.
Always
nice. Open. What I will do is, for everyone listening, I'll include the name of her blog in the show notes. So if they want to go and read it, reference it, that will be in there as well. Now, I know, I love this because it's beautiful. It's so much of what we feel learning should be, the passion, the natural learning, building on your love and real life learning. And as well, it's showing that it's not only just one way. You know, it's so important for connection and working with the individual student. I realize we're getting down into our time here. And so I guess I would like to ask you two things. One is, what advice would you have for parents that are looking for something different, that maybe don't have something like Freedom Thinkers available to them in their area, you know, that maybe need a change, and see that the curiosity or fire in their child's learning is not there anymore? What would you as an educator suggest for first few steps?
Well, I guess it depends on how gung-ho they are, because I mean, my first thing is that really, the only thing that we have is, well, there are two things. We have a very good program and we have very good staff. And so everything else, it really doesn't matter. We don't have new desks. But what we have is a staff that are passionate about learning. And we have a program that allows that to happen. And so, if you're in the school system and it's not working, I would try to, do that outside of school, that, you let them learn and you support them in it. And for people that are really gung-ho and they want it to do it, then I guess you do what I did and you make a program and get it to work.
I love it. Definitely, because there's, like you said, it's not going to work perfectly. You don't have to worry about it working perfectly. There's going to be bumps and bruises along the way, but just taking that action to happen. I love it. Okay. And if we want to find out more about Freedom Thinkers, is there a way that we can contact the school or find it online? What's the website for Freedom Thinkers?
The website is just www.freedomthinkerseducation.com. Now, I must say, I am not the best at, I'm much better at teaching and stuff like that than I am technology. So I'm not keeping it up as well as I should. However, we have just designed that to be one of the jobs, and one of the students is about to take the website over.
Nice.
And so you will probably see it get a lot better in a short time.
Wonderful. I think that's a great project for them to do. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, Sandra. I appreciate you coming on today.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please share, leave a review or comment. I'd love to hear your thoughts, ideas, and reflections on the episode. You can go to the website, imhomeschooling.com, or email me directly, robin@imhomeschooling.com.